And welcome to episode 29 of the Irish Photography Podcast. Today's topics are, is your lens holding you back, and what is your photography legacy?
I don't know who you are, but welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Sit back, relax, and listen to three guys talk about cameras, gear, settings, stories, and all things photography. Join Dermot, Darren, and John on Ireland's Best Photography Podcast. Let's go.
Hi guys, welcome along to another episode of the Irish Photography Podcast. Just before we start, just a quick notice to say that unfortunately things do happen on the podcast from time to time, and Darren's audio got corrupted when he sent it to me via email, and so we had to adapt today's podcast to make it sound like just myself and John. So just a word of warning, I will reference as the guys, but unfortunately Darren's audio didn't come through, but we've still managed to put a podcast together with myself and John. So sit back and relax, and we hope you enjoy it. And welcome along to the Irish Photography Podcast, guys. I'm joined, as always, with John Myler from Dublin. How are you guys? How are you keeping?
How are you, Dad? How are you? I'm doing great, thanks.
That's fantastic.
Did you not notice my hair today, Dad? Lads, I went down and got my hair cut today, being Valentine's Day.
Ooh, are you not doing something special with the ladies tonight, guys?
No, because we're here talking to you, Dad.
Brilliant. Okay, guys, so today's first topic, guys, is all about, is your lens holding you back? Look, it's very easy to become attached to lens, especially if you get it with your camera. You almost grow with it, as in talent-wise, like the 24-105L lens. It is a very good all-around lens, but does nothing amazing, but it'll never let you down either. But there does come a time when you think, is my lens holding me back from creating a decent shot? Like, I need a wider aperture, or I wish I had 1.4 for better bokeh, or I wish it was sharper like a high-end Sigma Art lens, or I wish I had IS, VC, or OS. Now, this is not an opportunity for my co-host to shout gas at me, but to talk about the seriousness of the issue, as there is bad lenses out there. I really believe that a lens can hold you back, and I don't want to hear bad workmen blames as tools, because that's just a load of crap. Like I said, there are bad lenses out there, and that we have been fooled or led to believe that they are good. But what are they? Or am I simply just one in a million that feels this way? I think not. John, we'll jump over to you, man. Have you ever any experience in your lifetime of photography, something that you weren't too happy? So you have the advantage of knowing what we're talking about, really. What you think, buddy?
I too use the 16-35 f/4 cracking lens, but prior to that I had got a lens which was a 16-35 f/2.8, and was that holding me back? Yes, it was. It was holding me back because of the picture quality. I found that to be quite soft in the corners, and I wanted to upgrade. And then Darren and I think Kevin Foley got to 16-35, and the two boys were going on and on and on about how good this was. But I couldn't see, like, how good can that be? It's a 16-35, it's just an f/4, I've got 2.8. What is the actual difference? So I sold it to a friend of mine.
It's funny now, John, because I'm going to attack you now in a few minutes.
And he got a good bargain.
I did my whole.
I remember getting the f/4. I was driving down to Kerry, down to Ballinskellig's with my father. I saw a scene and I pulled over. The first time I put the lens on the camera, and when I looked through the camera, I went, oh, sweet divine Jesus. It was unbelievable. And Darren, you know what I mean by that. The clarity through it, everything, it was just like a whole different lens. And from that day to this, that is my go-to lens in the landscape, big time. I do have to say the 24-105, love it. The L version, absolutely love it. It's never held me back because it's always a camera I've used, particularly when I'm on holidays or going around the city. It's just an absolutely fantastic lens. But I have got a lens, Dodd, at the moment that is holding me back, and that's my little nifty 50. Why is it holding me back? Because it's just not getting the quality. Is it the EF version I have, which is the basic end one? I'd love to be able to go and buy the L version of it, or the equivalent Sigma version, that's just going to give me much, much better quality in the glass. So yes, my little nifty 50 that I have, I'm doing a lot of portrait stuff here. I'm really doing it as practice, because the quality I'm getting is not good enough to be able to publish or show, if that makes any sense at all. Does that answer your question a little bit?
It does, and it's funny that you said it about your 16 to 35, because my notes here have that all down already. So I'll answer my own question that I put to the two of you. So basically, for me, the Canon, the 16 to 35 2.0 is possibly the worst lens I have ever owned. John, and I'm being serious, I can't believe you actually sold it to me. That'll just tell you how bad. I was actually gutted that I paid it for that amount of money for it, and it was actually so bad. Like, my mate David Woodland, he was in the market for a wide angle lens, and he asked me would I be interested in selling, because I had two wide angle lenses. I actually said no, because it's such a bad lens, I didn't want to fucking rob him. So
now, where did you think it was bad, Dad? Where did you find the bad? Same as me. What did you find bad about it?
The corner. Oh wait, I have a list of things that were wrong with that lens. So the corners were so soft. Why did you buy it in the?
Go on.
Sorry. Go on. No.
No, sorry. I cut across you. I was going to say, why did you buy it? What was your main? I remember why you bought it.
So
at
I wanted the 16 to 35 lens for an underwater housing. Mm-hmm. So I could use the 16 to 35 f2.8 or the f4. Now the f4 was cheaper. I just thought the 2.8 would be a better lens because they're getting more light.
Okay.
So bought that lens from yourself, and so the corners were ridiculously soft at every aperture, 2.8, f8, f16, everything. It was just so soft. And then if you're to zoom in at 35mm, it won't even focus right. Do you know? So you're under the water, or even in a landscape, you're zooming in 35, it won't even focus, it won't even lock on. It's stupid. It wasn't good at all. And then shooting at 2.8 then as well, it would often misfire, and near the whole image would be mushy all the time. So overall, that lens was ridiculously bad. And I just wouldn't recommend that lens to absolutely anyone. I kind of understand why Canon even brought out that lens. It was so bad. But they are rectifying it. The Mark III that they brought out was far superior to the Mark II. So, but that's not the only lens that has ever held me back. Staying with 16-35, I got rid of that lens. I traded it in. So I didn't sell it to any friend or anything like that. So I traded it in. Right, and I got my Sigma 20mm into my housing, and my photographs underwater have been absolutely tenfold since I put that camera into that housing. So that lens was holding me back so much from being a better underwater photographer. And I thought it was me all along. I was there going, jeez, my pictures are so bad. How come the lads are so much better? And then I was kind of putting it down to maybe it's just because I'm learning underwater photography. But no, it was the lens holding me back, because now I'm starting to get better results than my friends, you know. Mm. So that's pretty much evidence enough.
Just but on like that said, there, Dad.
It's not the only, sorry, go on, yeah.
Good. Just on that, before you move away from the 2.8, when I had that lens, I would have predominantly used that for the Astro. And I got some great Astro images of it. Now, I did use to crop it in to get rid of the short corners, but I never had a problem with the soft corners when I went to a higher aperture. I'm just wondering, I used that on my 6D and you went to a 5D Mark III. Would it have anything to do with that? No. Because the problems that you've had, I didn't have. And I know there's people out there listening to this. We have regular listeners that have the 2.8, and I've seen some of the shots and they're still quite good.
I don't know, maybe it's just that lens. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
But anyway, but like I said, that's not the only lens that ever held me back. And a lot of people now are going to question this next one, right? It's the Canon 85 1.2 Mark I. So it's the holy grail of photography. Don't get me wrong. When you get a good shot with this, when you get a banger, you're getting a banger. It's fantastic. But you have to understand, like, it's a very, very hard lens to use. Even for a seasoned professional photographer, once in a while, you know, like I said, you're going to get that banger, but the elements inside it are so big, it takes so long to focus. It would have, you'd often get lens flare quite easily, and you get these hazy images. But as a wedding photographer, I need results. Like, so with the 85 1.2, I would have to take 4 or 5 images to make sure I got that one that I needed. However, so I got rid of it, and I bought the Sigma Art 85 1.4. And now I only have to take the one, or maybe two at the most, and I know I've nailed it. And plus, that Sigma Art 85 1.4 is much sharper than the 85 1.2, because sometimes you will, like the 16-35 2.8, you are going to get mushy images every now and again. And plus, with that 85, sometimes you get a bit of back focusing, which would happen quite often. So I just wasn't too happy with that. So those two lenses did kind of hold me back from a from the weddings, a professional point of view. It was holding me back. I don't think it was just me, because a few people have said that about the 85mm 1.2 also. So, you know, that's kind of it really, you know.
Can I jump in there, Dad? On that 85mm, and is that the one that I used when we were out at the cliffs that day?
Remember, that's the lens, yeah.
And it is a cracking lens. I found it very heavy.
Oh, it's very, very...
Yeah, and very imbalanced when it was on the camera. But I was really curious to know why you got rid of that, because you were raving about that for a long time. And then... Then you got rid of it.
No, it's like I said, when you get a banger, you get a banger. And if you're shooting at 1.2, especially for video, it looks absolutely awesome. But you need to be shooting... on a Sony, so you know where your focus is, because you need focus peaking to know where your focus is. Because if you have it on a Canon 5D3 or 6D, you don't know where the focus is really shooting at 1.2, and it's hard to see it. And those LCDs are crap, like even the Sony is crap. So with the Sony, so focus peaking, at least you had the advantage of that. And like Darren, you did a vlog there with some of my footage for the mangroves in Mullen Haslake. And like, that's class. It looks really, really good. But that was hard work doing that. But yeah, it's a lovely lens. And I don't get wrong, I liked it at times. But more often than not, I was disappointed at the fact that I didn't get the consistency of shots that I do with the Sigma Art lens. So it was holding me back from a professional standpoint. But if I was using it in a fun manner like the one in Hasek, it was no problem. It was a joy to use.
Yeah, which I totally get that.
So, right, guys, on that note, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, who just won an amazing award for the Hainel Cube 2 in the Amateur Photography Awards 2019, guys. So, yeah, we'll talk to you all in a few minutes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back to the second topic of the Irish Photography Podcast, guys. So this topic is your photography legacy. So as some of you may already know, that I'm a bit of a freak when it comes to sport. I played and coached at a very high level of basketball here in Ireland, and I really feel I'm an American trapped in an Irishman's body. I remember I was supposed to move to Boston back in 2009, but I met this hot young blonde in Nancy Blake's in Limerick one night in town about 3 months before I was to go, but I ended up staying. 10 years later, we are married, but hey, I still love the NBA. I watch it daily, listen to podcasts, and I admire the time and effort these amazing athletes spend on their bodies and their craft to become the absolute best possible version of who they can become. I hear LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and all the legends before them, such as Michael Jordan, talk about the legacy that they will leave behind. Who will remember him? What will they say? Will it be positive? Will it be negative? I, for one, love to know, have you ever thought about what you will leave behind? Can you dictate it? What's your footprint going to be? What's your legacy? John, what's your legacy going to be?
Oh my God. Well, I'd like to think I will be as good as Michael Jordan when I retire. But that's a really, really, it's a good question, but it's also a deep question. I suppose.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a deep one. I haven't really thought that far ahead, if I'm quite honest with you. But I did give a little bit of a thought of it today. And I suppose where I am in my life, I suppose, in recent years and in the landscape and stuff, I am starting to see the landscape in a different way. And I'm not going to get into it now. Don't ask me to get into it now, because I'm not experienced enough to kind of explain it the way I'd like to explain it. But I would like to think that people might see my photographs or remember me, my images of a story that was told in the landscape, and the meaning of what the landscape meant to me as an individual, and how I dictate that through my images. you know, lately you will see some of my images now are kind of edited in an artistic form, which is something
the oil painting kind of thing, is it?
Yeah, yeah, which is something that we're not seeing out there done in the landscape. It only works on certain images, and it'll only work on certain images that I kind of feel about it. It wouldn't work on every image. So
how do you mean feel about it? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's kind of when I'm out in the landscape, if I see something that kind of brings me down to earth or grounds me and makes me feel at one, I suppose, with nature, then that image to me would become a little bit of an artistic image. It's hard though. It's really when you're out in the field like that, wandering around, that it just comes to you. It's very, very hard to explain just here to us and now. But if I was remembered as somebody whose landscape images were that bit different to everybody else's, that would be great. And in what way different? Maybe the artistic approach, the mindfulness approach, the little bit of thought that was put into it after the shutter was pressed. If that makes any sense to you whatsoever, because it only makes a small bit of sense to me.
Okay, so answer me this. So if you're lucky enough to live to 95 years of age, John, mm-hmm. All right, you're old, you're wrinkly, your tattoos don't look like they should do, and you look back on your life and you say, okay, did I make an impact with my photography? Did I become famous? Do you know? Become what I wanted to become? Do you understand?
I do. I get you. And you know what? To long and short, my granny actually lived to over 100 and her tattoos are fine, by the way. But I hope I have her genes. Jeez, I'll be doing well. But yeah, do you know what? The only people I want to have an impact on are my children. You know?
Okay.
I would love them to have my images up in their house, in their homes. Their children's children have my images up in their homes and be proud of it, to say that that was my dad, that was my granddad, that was my great-grandfather's images. And they're the only people I would like to have an impact on. If that impact had on other people as well that I'm not aware of, absolutely, that's brilliant. But I shoot the images for myself. If I'd like to have an impact and want people to be proud of me, that's just my family, to be honest with you, the long and short of it.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic. Yeah. Right, so from my own perspective, I think I've a total different outlook to this than you would, because I'm a very competitive person. I want to be the best at what I can be at all times, no matter what it is. Like, I won't even leave my own child beat me in a game of basketball. They have to earn it. You know, it's just the way I was brought up in life. My brother used to beat the crap out of me, and, you know, my father was very tough for me, and so on and so forth. But that's neither here nor there. But that just brings out who I am, you know. So, well, I'd love to become one of the best underwater photographers in years to come. You know, I've always had a passion for landscape photography, but there are so many unbelievable landscape photographers in our country, and us as a nation should be proud of the quality we've produced from our industry already. So, like, but I too would like my kids to say, hey, my dad was an awesome photographer. I want him to look at the body of work that I've collected. So, you know, I've put countless hours of learning and dedication into who I am and what I will become in the future. So in a broad spectrum, really, I just want to be unbelievable. Especially, like, I want to be an ambassador for some underwater photographer company or a retailer or something. Like, I know it sounds like a lot, but my dad always said to me, like, dream big. You can do anything you put your mind to, son. And I intend to keep dreaming big. Like, you know, I've always dreamt big. Like, even for the aspirations of the podcast, like, it's the same kind of principle. Like, who knows where this podcast can go? Do you know, like, I genuinely feel that this could be one of the biggest podcasts in Europe. Do you know, moving forward, like, the opportunities that we have as a podcast from a daily point of view, like getting early access to gear from Hanel, which is absolutely fantastic. Canon invited us up to Dublin to test out the EOS R, which is unbelievable. On Sunday, we're going to the IPF. This will probably come out after it, but still, we get to meet up with Marek Bigilowski, you know, from the Canon representative, and he's going to show us the Canon RP. So we get the perks that we get with this are absolutely fantastic. But like I said, as an overall, my legacy, I just want to be recognized as one of the best photographers in my industry or in my era. Now, like I said, it is a big ask, but like, I dream big. I want to be big. I want to be famous. I want loads of money. I don't know if I'm making sense or not, like, but, you know, I just dream big, man, you know?
No, I totally get that, Dad. And you're right. You have to aim for the top. You know, if you don't aim for the top, you're aiming for nothing. You know, you have to achieve. To achieve things, you have to look beyond the impossible, I suppose. But you are very driven. You are extremely driven. And I said this to you a while back about your underwater photography. I can't remember what episode we had, but I do recall saying, fast forward 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, so you've only got another 6 months to go. But yeah, you will. You will do well. Absolutely. I think you do have to aim high. Not everybody is a big high achiever or aims like you. Some things hold them back. Some, like the fear of failure, holds people back. It's one thing that holds me back still, and still does, issues with it. You know, you also worry about judgment. People worry about what other people are going to think of them. So there's a lot of things that hold people back, but you're an individual that those things don't seem to affect. And that's why you're driven, and that's why you will go places, and that's why you're doing well now. That's why you're driving around in a beautiful big van, Dodd Photography on it, getting to photograph models, getting to photograph everything. You know, you really are hitting the industry running, and that's because you're aiming high, and you should be proud of that. Just like I'm sure Trish and the kids are proud of that, you know? And I suppose it's people like myself, and I know Darren is a very big achiever as well, but speaking for myself, like, you know, you have to work hard, to think harder, to aim higher, you know? And that's where I am in my life. It's a struggle. But we'll get there. But you're doing well. You're doing well. Pat yourself in the back there.
Thanks,
go
buddy.
On. Give yourself a pat in the back for me. No, it's true. Yeah, it's, you know, the good thing about the podcast as well is, like, we don't prepare a lot of the stuff, though. We said from the start, a lot of the stuff is three lads talking as mates. So we talk off the cuff a lot. So that's coming from the heart. So well done. Keep it up, pal.
Cheers, buddy. Anyway, guys, we're going to leave that topic there. Delighted with those two topics that we've selected today. But for now, we're going to jump over to our news first. Canon have announced the development of 6 upcoming RF lenses, 2 85mm lenses, head scratcher there, a 24-70 2.8 IS, a 15-35 2.8 IS, a 70-200 2.8 IS, and a 24-240 f4-6.3 IS. All 6 RF lenses under development are built around Canon's new RF mount, which features a large 54 diameter and a shorter back focus distance than the current EOS DSLR cameras. Canon says, in addition, the RF mount enhances communication and power transmission between the lens and the camera body, which has helped Canon to achieve the world's fastest autofocus speed for a full-frame mirrorless camera system. So moving on over, guys, Nikon unveils the Nikkor Z24-70 f2.8S. This is a very promising lens now, Darren. You might actually like this. So the lens is the first to feature Nikon's new Arneo coating, which complements Nikon's nanocrystal coat to further reduce flare and ghosting. While nanocrystal coat suppresses the ghosting of flare coming from backlit and diagonal angles, the Arneo coat compensates for the light entering the lens from vertical angles, Nikon says. This is expanded field enables the lens to capture exceptional contrast and sharpness even when the light source is visible inside the frame. The lens is also Nikkor Z lens to feature a dedicated manual focus ring, a function button, and an info display. So it's going to have a digital readout on the top of the lens. So it's an organic EL lens information panel on the side of the lens to display the key settings such as focus, distance, depth of field, aperture, and focal length. The LFN button lets you set over 20 custom functions for shooting still photos. For focusing, the lens combines the stepping motor STM with Nikon's new multi-focus system. This system uses 2 actuators to move the focus groups at once, enabling the lens to achieve critical focus rapidly for nearly any distance, including close-up shooting. This lens is coming in 24.7% lighter and 18.4% shorter than its previous model, the 2470 for the DSLRs. 500px was hacked. your personal data was exposed for all 14.8 million users. That includes you, Darren. That includes you, John. That includes me. We all got hacked.
Not me.
What? Oh, did it not you?
No.
All right.
I'm not on it.
So what did it get? So basically, from a report here on Petapixel, the popular photo sharing service 500px has announced that it was the victim of a hack back in 2018. And are you telling us now? And that personal data was exposed for all roughly 14.8 million accounts that existed at the time. In an email sent out to the users, an announcement posted to its website, 500px states that it was only on February 8, 2019, that the team learned of an unauthorized intrusion to its system that occurred around the 5th of July, 2018. Wow. Yeah, that's mad. They took their time telling you that one now, didn't they?
How many users did you say?
14.8 million.
Wow.
Best thing in the news this week, guys. Canon unveils the new EOS R-P, the smallest and lightest full-frame EOS camera. So Canon has just announced the new Canon EOS-RP mirrorless camera. It's the smallest and lightest full-frame EOS camera ever made. Compared to the EOS R, the Canon's first full-frame mirrorless camera announced in 2018. The EOS R-P is a lower-end camera that is lighter on both your back and your wallet. Inside the EOS R-P is a 26.2 megapixel full-frame CMOS sensor, a small step down from the 30.3 megapixel one found in the EOS R. Backed by the same DJIC 8 processor, the sensor features the same ISO range of 100 to 4000. Continuous shooting burst of 5 frames per second. It's got a dual pixel CMOS AF system feature, which is 4,779 autofocus points, Darren. Something that really excites you. I know that for a fact. So on the back of the EOS R-P is a 0.39 inch 2.36 million dot OLED electronic viewfinder. Under the EVS is a 3 inch 1.0 million dot vari-angle touchscreen LCD, and that supports the touch and drag autofocus as well. The video kind of got let down a small bit, guys. On the video front, it can shoot 4K 25 frames per second at 120 megabytes second with 8-bit color depth for both internal recording and an external recorder. By comparison to the SR, it can do 4K 30 frames at 480 megs and up to 10-bit with an external recorder on. And it doesn't do Canon Log either. Canon EOS R-P is available for pre-order starting now, okay? And the camera will ship and hit the stores for the end of February 2019. So if you want your camera, guys, go to your local retailer and maybe put a few bob on the table. I kind of like this camera. I'd love to test it out a small bit, maybe. That's our news, guys. And we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor and we'll be right back with our VSP.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast, guys. We're going to jump right in there with this week's VSP, a very solid product. So, what have I got for you guys? Any ideas? Any guesses?
Is it something to do with underwater? Just because you're speaking about it earlier and that's what your legacy is going to be?
Yes, it is for underwater.
Oxygen tank.
yeah, that is quite essential. No, okay, I'll get to it, guys. Okay, so today's VSP is called the Subsea Plus 10 Diopter / Magnifier. Now, it's not just for underwater photographers. You can use this on real land as well. So basically what it is, so ReefNet Subsea Magnifier is a high quality close-up lens specifically designed for underwater photographers and videographers. It may be used on its own or mounted in a subsea adapter for maximum convenience. Its features include a 52mm diameter lens. It offers a wide field of view compatible with even full-frame DSLRs or crop sensors. It's available in either a plus 5 or plus 10 diopter version. I, for one, have the plus 10. So you get to choose the power best suited to your style of photography. Or you can get both for the most flexible. So you can add the plus 10 and put the plus 5 on top of that as well. So you're getting a plus 15. So the plus 10 teleoperator will give you 50% magnification with 60mm lens and over 100% magnification with a 1-5 lens. Okay, so you're almost getting super macro territory here. So it's a sealed multi-element and it's coated optics. Because Sub-CA's optics are air sealed, they retain full power underwater. You can use, like I said, the multiple lens elements. You can either use 2 or 4 even, you know. You can virtually eliminate the pin cushioning and distortion and chromatic aberration. Furthermore, the anti-reflective coatings on all lens surfaces increase image brightness. So it actually has a 67mm mounting thread. So you can actually literally screw it onto the front of your lens, John, your macro lens. You can literally screw it onto the front of it and have 100% magnification.
That's unreal.
I mean, you can really, really get in there. So what I have it used for is on my underwater housing. I talked to you a while ago, an adapter, so I can literally, it's like a door, it opens and closes, so I can use it with or without the magnifier. If I didn't want to use it, if I was too close to subject matter and I didn't want it so close, I can just open it out so I don't have to use it. Again, that costs extra money for an adapter as well, and I'll get into the price points in a few minutes. But you can really use this magnifier for, like I said, on land or underwater. And it really gives you opens the door for things that you could shoot underwater, like things called nudie branch. So what nudie branch is, it's an underwater slug, which is a lot of people like to photograph. And some people literally cannot photograph them because they're so small. They're not even, they'd be about the size of your baby fingernail. And to photograph that in great detail, you really do need one of these magnifiers. And so, like, I tried to photograph him before and I couldn't get him. And my dive buddy, Mike Orts, he gets some absolutely mind-blowing pictures with these things. And he used to be dead jealous of him. I'd be like, God damn it, I just can't photograph him because my lens isn't good enough on its own. So therefore, I had to go away and buy this. So just to make me try to get better than him. And it's always competition, like I said, with me. So I have to be better than him.
No, so you're just you're just aspiring to be better, to better yourself, like we spoke earlier. That sounds class. I have to have a look at that now the next time I'm over in your house.
It is really cool. It adds a total different element to your photography.
I'm very curious to hear the price tag.
Let's take guesses how much this costs.
Jesus. I'm just going to go 450, so, because...
You'd be surprised, guys. This is actually coming in at €286 for the magnifier, okay? So it's not too bad. Now, in saying that, that's on a website that you can't get them in Ireland, so it's pointless even shopping from here unless you pick them up secondhand, which is like hen's teeth. So you'd have to get them in Denmark or you can get them in the UK. So in the Denmark website, they're €286 for the plus 10 diopter, but for the 5 plus diopter, it's €231. So there's a bit of saving there, but you're not going to get the reach with the plus 10, obviously. But you can buy them and that website is called photographit.eu. And the English one then is from Underwater Visions, and that's £210 UK. So you'll probably have to pay a delivery on top of that also. What that turns into in euro, I've no idea. Now, the most expensive part about it is you're going to have to buy an adapter also to fit your particular macro port or your whatever port you're using for your camera. That's coming in, for my adapter, it's coming in at €286. So all in all, before you're finished, guys, you're going to be spending about £600. But on some housings, on the Naughty Cam, you don't need the adapter. You can just literally screw it onto the front of the port. So it depends on what housing you have and what ports you have.
What's it called? A Naughty Cam? That sounds so dodgy.
Naughty Cam housings? No, they're actually quite good. They're one of the best camera housings that you can actually get, and they're very, very expensive. You can pay absolutely like €3,000-5,000 for one of the Naughty Cam housings. So, yeah, dodgy, I doubt it. But yeah, they're very, very good. So for my overall of this VSP, I am going to give it a 7 out of 10. And the reason why I docked it a few marks is that the lens is actually quite heavy, you'd be surprised. So when you do put it on, it's going to give a negative buoyancy effect to your camera housing. So just keep that in mind, that you might want to put on some extra foam to give that extra bit of a lift. So when underwater photography, you want your camera housing to be neutral buoyancy. You don't want it in positive, you don't want it in negative, you want it just right. Because if you leave go of it, you don't want it floating up to the top, and if you leave go of it, you don't want it floating to the bottom. Simple. You get that, guys?
Very good. Sounds interesting.
Very good. John, okay. I think you'd actually use it.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to give it, because I haven't seen it, I haven't held it, I don't know what it looks like. Taking your word by it, I'll give it a 7.
So on that bombshell, I'd just like to remind you all, guys, we do have an absolutely fantastic Facebook group. We have over 500 members, and in recent weeks, I have noticed that an influx of people trying to join the group, and we have said from the very start, please, just name a host of the Irish Photography Podcast and then we will leave you in. We've had to turn away quite a few people. Simple reason is that we don't want any bots or scammers or anything like that in, guys. Okay, so guys, I'd like to say thank you very much for listening to this week's episode, and we'd love to see you again next week, guys.
Cheers, Dard. Bye.
Ew.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.